bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook, NFL Week 9, Monday Night Football Edition. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the one, the only, Payne Insider. Again, I always want to remind you, our loyal listeners, FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard. Take advantage of the risk-free bets. The enhanced odds that would have gotten you to the window at 30-1 yesterday on a Kansas City Chiefs money line ticket, along with in-game parlay odds, you name it, single-game parlay, excuse me, everything you could possibly want to put in your betting tool belt. And Payne, another week of NFL football nearly in the books. One game left to go. Hopefully your Sunday went well, my friend.
Not bad. Should have been better. Still was profitable. Decent week overall. One of those weeks where you're just like, this should have been substantially better. And even though you won, it feels kind of like a loss. But these are the Monday mornings we have as sports bettors. How's everything?
Yeah, same old, same old. The fiance returned from a little family trip. She spent her quality time this weekend with my loved ones down for a little wedding shower. Not her own, of course, not yet. And so she came back, and I informed her where we stood on a contest selection tonight. She told me she doesn't care. She normally roots for us, but will not be doing such in regards to her Steelers, knowing that we tried to make a compelling case for the Bears.
Interesting. So, huh. She's out of town a lot, by the way.
She lives the good life. I mean, I'm not going to fault her. She understands.
You must be rich.
Yeah, I must be rich. You know, if I slept on a mattress of cash like you, we'd be in a much better position. But going down to Phoenix for a 48-hour trip isn't exactly living in the lap of luxury. And I think she's also realized in the 4+ years we've been together that the more weekends she's away during the fall, it's win-win all the way around for both parties involved.
Oh, I'm sure. I got to figure out how to navigate that. I got to find somebody that's maybe in like a nurse, I'm thinking, because, you know, we don't get healthcare in the betting space and they work long hours. I'm looking for someone maybe like...
You could go a doctor as well.
2.5 days a week. Would that work? 2.5 days a week? That's about the time.
You would need a strong, independent woman to try and be able to do that. The one profession, yes, and this isn't a jab by any stretch of the imagination, I couldn't see you dating a teacher that had summers off and a lot of time to burn on the weekends. I don't think that would be a great dynamic for you as far as the stability of a long-term relationship.
Completely agree.
So it is what it is, and there's no doubt I always get a kick out of it because when she's gone for the weekends during football season, the dog wants no part of me. So I see the dog early in the morning. She gets her walk, and she pretty much parks downstairs because she doesn't want to be anywhere around the football shenanigans that take place, the level of frustration, and, you know, our 90-minute to 2-hour conference call that we have to tidy up things for the NFL. So it's always entertaining. She's learned as well. It's a great dynamic, let me tell you.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. So, at least there is some consistency there. There's a plan intact. Your dog is very touchy. Let's put it that.
Yes, she touchy. Is. Well, I don't know if touchy is the right word. I'll go temperamental. Yeah,
finicky.
Temperamental. Yeah, okay. The joys of a rescue dog, where you're not sure of their checkered past and exactly what some of their triggers are. It makes for exciting endeavors here and there in terms of how she's going to behave at any given moment. Although she's great in the house, not destructive. But yes, no doubt temperamental. Much like the Los Angeles Rams temperamental offense we saw last night, my friend. What the hell was that from Sean McVay and company?
Not really sure. And there were some injuries throughout the course of the week, obviously. Woods was questionable, got in a limited. We knew Stafford had the back injury, got in a walkthrough on Friday, but that was about it. Not very good from McVay. There were certain times where, even if you watched late in that game, when it felt like all the Rams needed was one momentum play to get them over the top, it's 21-6. It's 21-9. If you watch those two drives, still sitting in the huddle, still, you know, letting the play clock drain to 4:31. Like, it was the most bizarre thing you had seen from an offense. Still running on second and short, even though you're down 2 scores. Like, it just, it didn't make sense. It wasn't the best night for McVay, obviously not the best night for Stafford and company. Really, you kind of just chalk it up potentially to a one-game anomaly. But there are some things there that are concerning from McVay, as great as he has been. And you don't want to nitpick. There's some things that stand out that I don't love.
Do we have to finally buy into the Titans' defense with that performance last night, and given what they've been able to accomplish over the last 4 weeks, knocking off the Bills at home, taking care of the Kansas City Chiefs in dominant defensive fashion, going on the road, knocking off the Colts within the division, and following it up in this particular spot without their bell cow in the backfield? I mean, I know you and I kept waiting for that Titans defensive regression. We thought this group could be better this season given the upgrades in personnel, but that kind of blew me away with the amount of pressure that they were able to generate, and they've been able to mask some of their potential deficiencies as far as the secondary given the injury concerns.
They play really hard. Boy, they hit, they play downhill, they're all very feisty. They are, I would say, a sophisticated coverage unit in terms of scheme. They're going to throw different looks at you, very Belichick-like. Give Vrabel and the defense a ton of credit. I mean, they just, they play hard, they play physical. It wasn't one of the best spots either, you know? The price was a touch high, and we talked about that. The spot wasn't great. But, I mean, Jeffrey Simmons, you mentioned him big time. Best game of the season by far. 8 pressures, 3 sacks. Had a few run stuffs as well. This was really, when you kind of think about that game on paper beforehand, Tennessee's defense really wasn't getting a bunch of pressure this year. 31st in pressure rate. And we knew the secondary had some questions. I don't want to call it an anomaly performance because they've played hard all year, and you kind of mentioned the 4 wins. You're just kind of waiting for that spot where they just kind of go plop. Maybe it's this weekend at home against the Saints. That line would certainly indicate that. But I don't really know what we saw from the Rams offense last night. It was very bizarre. I was hoping that Chris would be like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what's happening, right? Like, were the Rams routes too far down the field and the pressure was coming in too quickly? Like, they didn't pan. You know, those are always where you're like watching the game. You're like, hey, can we just like go to the all 22 right now? Like, let's see where these routes are being run. Why are guys not open? Because you have great route runners. So even if you're playing these advanced disguised coverages, but you're playing off coverage, like, these guys should still be able to like find space. Just very, very bizarre. I just wasn't a fan of what McVay did last night. And then obviously, you know, when you don't have your quarterback all week at practice, can throw off some timing.
Speaking of the camera coverage, was I the only one that felt like every goal line situation was bizarre? Every time they got inside like the 5 or 10 yard line, that I felt that was an alternate universe or an original edition of Madden. I want to make sure that I have some sanity left after watching 2 full days of football.
It was a very, you know, they're trying to get very innovative, right, with all the technology we have now, but sometimes it's just too much.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to figure that out. I will say one thing, and I've never been a defensive coordinator. I never will be a defensive coordinator. I begin to wonder if teams, when they come up with a game plan to try and defend the Rams, if it's as straightforward, to a certain extent, trying to neutralize Cooper Kupp to the most effective ability they can and forcing Matthew Stafford to use some of his secondary options, because he doesn't have the same rapport with Robert Woods. I think we saw on one drive late in the game that it was pretty much all Van Jefferson, but if you can bracket Cooper Kupp and at least minimize him as that security blanket, what this Rams offense will look like going forward. But I guess we'll get a better indication Monday Night Football a week from today. We'll see the Rams on the road against the 49ers, another team that was extremely disappointing. We'll get to them in a matter of minutes. But while we're sticking with the positive, pain, what did you see yesterday that really stood out to you?
I think you have to go to Cleveland. I mean, that was a total team effort from the Browns. And it started with the defense. Pick 6 from Denzel Ward. That was an absolute game changer because the Bengals were kind of moving the ball in that first drive with ease. Obviously, that was their script. But it looks like you're going in for the score, and then poof, 99-yard interception return. So there's a 14-point swing that kind of sets the tone of that entire game. The two key factors we talked about for Cleveland both ended up coming to fruition. Joe Burrow pressured on 35% of his dropbacks. oddly, the two interceptions came from clean pockets. But even if the pressure wasn't getting home, it kind of forced Cincinnati into this dink and dunk pass game. 4.2 completed air yards for Burrow. And then you got the focused Baker. He's always seemed to play better without OBJ when you look at those splits. And then if you followed Baker's path as a quarterback, he's kind of always been the underdog. And it seems to be he does best when there's the most adversity or when he feels like he needs to prove himself. And the idea that was being pitched, in the, at least initially, was that OBJ's wide open all day. Baker just can't get him the ball. And so we saw a really, really big effort from Baker. 10 explosives from the Browns offense yesterday. And so that's how you blow out your in-state rival and win 41-16 when you're plus three in turnovers, have one of them be a 99-yard pick six, and then win the explosive battle 10-3.
Yeah, it never hurts to try and put all of those things together. In Cincinnati, plenty of self-scouting will be going on during the bye week to see if this team can get its ship back on course, given its improbably hot start and then two dud performances in a row, one situationally speaking and one where you thought you would get an all-hands-on-deck type effort that didn't materialize yesterday against Cleveland. Full marks to the Denver Broncos as well, Payne. I think that was arguably the best we've seen that team play defensively all year, but I wasn't sure if it was the Cowboys that contributed or if it was Denver playing with a chip on their shoulder after they lost their defensive leader with Von Miller being traded earlier in the week.
Very interesting to see how that unfolded, and certainly some sharp money early in the week on Dallas. We saw Pinnacle on game day go to 10.5, but you know, there was some buyback quietly on the Broncos, but I thought they were solid in all areas. Front seven defensively was dominant. I'm really surprised because that was an area with all the injuries. Purcell was out. You trade away Vaughn, as you mentioned. The secondary was fantastic. We know they have some great parts back there, but you know, Bryce Callahan was out. He's a slot corner that is one of the most valuable that really no one talks about, I think, but us. But we know his value. Dak's completion percentage, 13.5% below expectation. Worst mark of the week so far. Denver did enough offensively. We love Javonte and we're probably a little biased, but he was awesome. 6.5 yards a carry, 191 yards between Williams and Gordon on the ground, and then you had your typical Teddy Bridgewater day, right? Just kind of efficient, didn't have a single turnover-worthy pass. Completion percentage was 4.5% above expectation. Garrett Bowles, the Broncos starting left tackle, was out. We thought that could be an issue. It wasn't. Denver's O-line held up pretty well. I think part of that was the scoreboard, right? When you have the lead, you can be multiple. It was important for Denver to play the game in a neutral state so your offensive line didn't become a problem. And Denver did that in spades. Not only did they keep it in a neutral state, but they played with a double-digit lead for 40-plus minutes.
Yeah, I mean, this was a dominant performance from the Broncos. Obviously, the Cowboys weren't exactly crisp by any stretch of the imagination. Dak Prescott never appeared to feel comfortable in the pocket early on. I also want to give the Broncos offense a little bit of credit. They did what we've suggested teams need to do, given early season metrics. They went out and they said, you know what, Tim Patrick, go exploit the front runner for defensive player of the year. They threw right at Trevon Diggs and really reaped the benefits early on. Much to the chagrin of Cowboy fans who told me to shut my pie hole after some of my comments during the course of the early game.
Yeah, you know, we kind of identified that as being an issue 2-3 weeks ago, and you know, he just has too much gamble in him. And it's understandable when you start the year with 7 interceptions and 2 of them are return touchdowns, you kind of just have that idea in your head that like everything I can just go after and attack. But in terms of him just being like a great coverage guy, that hasn't bared fruit to this point. And I think I haven't looked, but I know when we broke down last week's game of Minnesota and the Cowboys, we're like, this guy's on pace to give up almost 1,200 yards. And it wasn't just the Tim Patrick play, right? They had the Broncos stopped on a 3rd and long, and Cortland Sutton drew a pass interference in the end zone, and it gave them 1st and goal from the 1. And so that's how Denver initially got on the board. So it won't show up in the stat sheet, but that was Tavon Diggs in coverage there as well that had the large pass interference there to get the Broncos offense rolling early.
Yeah, we'll see. All of a sudden, the Broncos with back-to-back wins, pacing now, hopefully, with a potential win on the horizon against the Eagles to put us in good standing for our win total before their schedule gets a little bit more difficult down the stretch. As far as other good things that stood out to you, wasn't sure what you picked up on during the course of your viewing over the weekend.
I think you have to give Colt McCoy some credit. And that's the one thing we said about him. He's a professional quarterback, right? He's well-studied. He knows where the ball needs to go. He can get it out on time. He can do it accurately. He can operate an offense. If you listen to Colt's presser this week, it was all about making guys around him comfortable, he said. So how he got in and out of the huddle, how he spoke, his cadence, he wanted everything to mimic Kyler Murray so nobody else in the offense had to adjust to him. Completion percentage, 10% above expectation. Didn't have a single turnover-worthy throw. 22 for 26. Now, I'll be candid. D'Amico Ryan has some questions to answer.
Some questions?
Scheme was horrific, right? I mean, obviously, Colt McCoy was good, right? 22 for 26. But how about make him earn it, right? He had the lowest intended air yards of the entire week. DeAndre Hopkins was out. Chase Edmonds went down early in the game. How about you force Colt McCoy to maybe push the ball downfield with some tighter coverage? That didn't happen. And then, like, the mentality, it was a defense that just wasn't into this game. They got bullied at the point of attack. I can't tell you how many times a run was stopped for no yards or 2 yards that suddenly turned into 3, 4, and 5 yards. And they were just more physical. The running backs wanted it. They were just bulling guys forward. Now, give Cliff and Vance some credit. There are some really high-end players on Arizona's roster, and they're playing extremely well. But there's also a lot of holes. And Vance has disguised some of those. Cliff has gotten a little bit better as a play caller. And just altogether, the holes that we think Arizona has, those guys filling those holes are playing way above expectation. And so now you have an Arizona team that is certainly vying for a Super Bowl run, dare I say. That was obviously a big loss last night with the Rams going down. And so when you can pick up a game on the road with Colt McCoy, you're feeling great about yourself because now you have a one-game lead plus the title.
Can I ask you a question on this game? And we talked about it in terms of the downgrade from Kyler Murray to Colt McCoy. I believe the number you gave was 3.5 to 4 points. That number by the time...
Four and a half.
From the time it opened with the Arizona Cardinals, a 2.5-point favorite. I know there were some cluster injuries with DeAndre Hopkins. That thing closed 5.5.
Yep.
That ends up being a bigger line move on that game from Kyler Murray to Colt McCoy than what we ended up seeing transpiring from Aaron Rodgers handing the ball off to Jordan Love.
Let's map this out just so we're... There was certainly some weirdness with the initial opening of Chiefs-Packers. If my memory serves me correct, there was like kind of a battle between like ones on
that. Yep, we saw it.
There was a scenario where Green Bay was -1 and then it got to 8.5 the other way, and then there was some Packer money which drove it down to 7. So like at peak... Right, there was a situation where Green Bay went from -1 to +8.5, and you know you're dealing with the 3, the 4, the 6, and the 7 there. But to your point, I think we made the downgrade 4.5, and there was a scenario where you know you had the 49ers +2.5 at one point in the week. To get out to 5.5 was substantial, and we talk all the time. I think the quarterback injury stuff is like, when we bet it is, you know, got to be like 0-100.
No, I think it's worse than that now, honestly. I think games. It might be 0-196 at this point.
It was one of those games where we actually didn't even play that straight. I just wanted to get out ahead and had some teasers on the 49ers +7.5, and somehow that still didn't manage to win.
I shouldn't laugh at our misfortune. Like,
Colt McCoy is a guy that, you know, not everyone really likes, and I understand that he's had ample opportunity to be like a starting quarterback in this league. But in terms of a backup quarterback, in terms of his skill set, being able to identify and release the ball quickly and deliver it accurately, in a one-game setting, he's probably one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league. just a really, really smart guy. And I just, you know, I think when the perception is, you know, this kid was a star at Texas and he was supposed to be, you know, this really high-end quarterback. And because that hasn't been the case, we suddenly diminish his ability as a backup quarterback. And I don't see that. And then what ends up happening in this one game sample is everybody else knows they need to step up. So James Conner probably has his best game as a professional.
Dude looks like he was shot out of a cannon. He looked like he couldn't couldn't time his 40 with anything but a sundial in the waning stages of his time with the Steelers. Suddenly he dons the red and white of the Cardinals. And I thought, honestly, the first time I saw burst that it was Chase Edmonds, not realizing that Edmonds had gone down earlier in the game.
He was fantastic. And then, you know, you get like Nick Bosa. Watch that screenplay. Nick Bosa's job there is to not get shot out of a cannon and rush the passer. Like, he's got to be able to identify, like, oh my God, I got in here a little too quickly. Maybe something's up and it's going to be a screen my way. It's like, no, Nick Bosa was terrible on that play. And so Connor's able to get by him and it's a screen play for, you know, 50 yards or so. But Colt McCoy was fantastic. And, you know, it's weird because you're number grabbing. Right, like I know where that line is going to go, so it's like let's get something here on the 49ers. But the whole kind of breakdown for us was Colman McCoy is probably pretty good, right? He's well studied. He's going to know where the ball needs to go within the offense, and he's going to get it there on time and accurately. And sure enough, he did, and there wasn't any pressure on him. The way D'Amico Ryans played defense was, hey, we're going to play off coverage, and even though we saw him capable of completing short passes, we didn't adjust at halftime either.
Well, maybe he decided he watched so much of the Vikings game against the Cowboys and how they chose to defend Cooper Rush. He thought a similar approach was going to be perfect scenario for trying to slow down a backup quarterback. But here we are with the 49ers having a glorious chance to get themselves back in the thick of things, dropping a decision, and now they'll have a pissed off Rams team coming into their building. One thing I will say, if you're going to be an elite level head coach, you can't lose what? I think they've lost 12 out of 13 games at home or 8 in a row. Not exactly an ideal scenario for Kyle Shanahan. We'll see how they're able to right the ship if they are going forward. And I guess, you know, when you talk about all the accolades heaped on the Arizona Cardinals, you mentioned D'Amico Ryans and some of the struggles for San Francisco defensively. You may as well transition from the good to the bad. The 49ers, Payne, ran the ball 11 times in the game. I know that they got themselves behind the eight ball early, but they abandoned a ground game faster than we may have ever seen with Kyle Shanahan calling plays.
It's really bizarre because the outside zone stuff really works well against a Cardinals defense. That's kind of where they've been susceptible when they do give up some of their runs. Jimmy G was oddly pretty good as well. When you look at his completion percentage above expectation, he had a solid day. Obviously, you know, the late pick is kind of irrelevant. The game's already over at that point, and he's kind of forcing things into windows. You had the Ayuk fumble when it looked like momentum was starting to turn a little bit. Like, I think at that point was it 21-7 and they were driving and Ayuk makes a great catch and turns to go up the field, and you know, it's a strip fumble inside the five. And so things kind of changed off that turnover where Arizona was able to regroup a little bit and press the lead out. But you would like to see, you know, God forbid San Francisco goes in there and now they're down seven. Things probably change a little bit. So that was a big turning point if you look at win probability.
Yeah, I mean, just such a weird sequence of events. And, I mean, we've belabored the point in that particular game. So, obviously, those weren't the only teams that struggled. There were plenty of other performances to be disappointed by. And I'll start in Western New York, Payne. When you look at the Buffalo Bills, they had 9 carries total for their running backs for a grand total of 22 yards in a game that they were never trailing by more than a field goal. I mean, 4.6 yards per play. They finished that game -2 in the turnover department. And for extended stretches, they had no answers whatsoever for the 85 Bears, aka the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive line.
Everyone was crowning Buffalo in the AFC after they beat Kansas City. And then all of a sudden, you know, you choke a game away late at Tennessee and score 0 in the fourth quarter. Buffalo comes out of the bye week and they struggled even last week against the Dolphins defense that they've dominated for years. You know, I think they won that game 26-11, but if you look, it was a lot of added points late on short fields when the Dolphins started going for it. The offense was not very good, just a 28% success rate in the first half against Miami last week, and that's a defense in the bottom third of the league for sure. Then you followed up this week, 4.5 yards per pass against Jacksonville's defense, dead last in pass efficiency. Josh Allen was sacked 4 times. He has as many interceptions as explosive passes. His completion percentage, 4% below expectation. This is like when you kind of string it all together, starting with the fourth quarter of the Titans game. This is like 9 straight quarters of very shaky offense for Brian Daboll and Josh Allen.
Have you noticed anything that's changed? Is there something broken? Are they tinkering with things? I mean, what has created such a struggle for Buffalo that we didn't see coming given all the strides they made last season and even this year, the glimpses of offensive upside that we've grown accustomed to?
It's kind of what the Chiefs are going through. Defenses realized that we want to play with 3 and 4 receivers, and we're going to make them go 12, 13, 14 plays. And so there was an added emphasis at some point on establishing the ground game, not just because these are the looks defenses are giving you, but also, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, we thought the AFC was going to go through Buffalo. And even though Josh Allen has an absolute cannon, suddenly you start hosting these playoff games in Buffalo. It's like, you know, we can't just chuck it 60 yep. times a game. We're going to have to figure out how to enhance our ground game. It's a little bit of a problem. Like, you know, defenses are, you know, Josh Allen's regressed a touch in terms of his accuracy this year compared to last. Defenses are playing them a little bit different. The offensive line was a question mark that was, you know, they weren't horrible, but it was certainly an area that you could have upgraded and they chose not to. And so, you know, Josh Allen was under duress yesterday a whole bunch. But yeah, it's kind of a combination of a lot of little things going on there. And then obviously, you know, you don't make excuses, but Brian Daboll's had some unfortunate things transpire in his life over the last 3-4 weeks where, you know, he's lost 2 parental figures, we'll call them. So there's a lot of little things that are attributing to what's going on in Buffalo right now, but the talent is obviously there, and I think they'll start to get
well. That's a crazy part about it. I think in a knee-jerk league like we see with some wild results over the last 2 weeks, we're still barely at the midpoint of the NFL season, and even the best Patriots team we'd seen in the past, you know, had oftentimes struggled early in the season. As long as you're playing your best football around Thanksgiving and through December and January, you can make a mid-season loss, regardless of how big a favorite you were, seem like an afterthought, and continue to use that as a building block. As far as some of the other bad performances, or obviously we can buck at things in the ugly, wasn't sure what you wanted to highlight given everything that we'd seen unfold.
I think we have to really talk about Sam Darnold and Carolina's offense as bad, ugly, whatever you want to call it, whatever describing word, because oof, I know we partly the reason we gave out the first half under in Carolina last Thursday is we didn't expect much from the Panthers offense, and it was kind of one of those free rolls. We liked the under 21 regardless of who was at quarterback or running back, and if you got a situation where CMC was out and Sam Darnold was out, awesome. If they both played, more than fine with it. And so 65 total yards in the first half, 2.8 yards per play. If it wasn't for 2 Mac Jones turnovers that set up Carolina in plus territory, they would have put up a bagel the entire game. They would have been blanked. Belichick obviously has Sam Darnold's number at this point, and it is very clear that Darnold's regressed from earlier in the year. We've talked about some offensive line problems basically anytime we've discussed Carolina. CMC returned but was on a limited snap count. Sam Darnold wasn't good under pressure, had a 1 passer rating, completed 5 of 16 passes, completion percentage 9% below expectation. I don't know if you saw this on the sideline, Todd, but Robbie Anderson was not happy with Sam Darnold on the sideline. Whipped the helmet off, yelled at him, and you could see, he said, "Get your shit together, brah." And so anytime Robbie Anderson's brah on you, not a good offensive day.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere along the way, you think Carolina can figure it out or they'll get a reprieve against a lackluster defense. But even in their win last week against the Atlanta Falcons, it wasn't because the offense lit the world on fire. They're putting a huge burden on Carolina defensively. And if anything, it's disguised a lot of the progress they've been able to make on that side of the ball in terms of how they've been able to even stay in a lot of these games. So yes, things not exactly looking like the rosy outlook we saw earlier in the year for a potential playoff sleeper in the form form of the Carolina Panthers. Payne, do we want to take a shot at the Vikings, or does this become low-hanging fruit week in, week out?
I can't do it. I mean, they exceeded expectation. They led by double digits in that game, so I'm going to be kind. But you had the players call the coaching staff out this week. Adam Thielen, who is very much like you, right? Very corporate-based, not going to call out upper management, not going to be, just going to be the kind of employee you want. And he called out the staff this week, and they were uber-aggressive early. Deep shot to Jefferson. I don't know what happened in the second half. It all went to crap again. And what was bizarre was the conservative nature they had in the third quarter wasn't one where it was like constant running, because Cook barely touched the ball in the third quarter for some bizarre reason. They just can't put it all together. And then all of a sudden you could kind of see it unfolding. Harrison Smith, before the game's announced out with the big C, he'll be out again this coming week. You had Patrick Peterson, who was on IR already, and then Breshad Breeland, your other starting quarter, goes down in the game, and it looked semi-severe. I should have looked this morning to see how severe it was, but he needed help off the field. And so suddenly you're down with three of your best corners. We knew Daniil Hunter out for the season after the, I believe it was a pec injury in the Dallas game. So now all of a sudden, like, you start to like think about this, you're down your top two corners, you're down, you know, your safety, you're now down Daniil again, and suddenly we're having this issue where the Vikings defense is decimated by injury once again for the second year in a row. I thought they played very well. They played tough. Anthony Barr made a massive play.
Man, was that athletic.
Where now, unbelievable, because he's a linebacker, so he switched down to defensive end, batted it up. As he's getting chopped, he's catching it on the way down. You're getting it in decent field position. I think like the 35 or 40 yard line, you're saying to yourself, like, all our offense needs to do is maybe hit an explosive, pick up 30 yards, and maybe we can win this in overtime. But three and out immediately. So it's just a very bizarre offense that's not operating at peak. Clint Kubiak has kind of been gifted this job on his father's name, and he's not very good. And so that's partly what we're having here. It'll be interesting to see if this goes completely sideways, because I don't think Zimmer's completely out of the woodwork if this were to just spiral downward. He could be very much on the hot seat. And it's wild because, you know, a year and a half ago, at least within the gambling community, Zimmer was one of the most respected, and he was covering spreads left, right, and center. Just hasn't been the case. Although he did get the cash yesterday.
That he did, despite a game day move that actually took it up to 7.5 at some of the sharper shops out there. And when you look at Zimmer's ATS record, I think it moves to 33-16-1 coming into a game off a straight up loss. We'll see if that manifests itself this weekend. And I know our listeners are sick of us belaboring the point, but there may not be a win total that I've ever bet, Payne, that's going to be more frustrating, win or lose, than the Minnesota Vikings, knowing how close they've been to winning a lot of these games where it feels all the coin flips have kind of gone against them. So we'll see how things finish out for them over the second half of the season. Before we move into look at lines, wanted to make sure there wasn't anything that we happened to gloss over that you wanted to share as far as observations over the weekend.
I decided to subject myself to Texans Dolphins, and so that's one that we can address, because it was kind of interesting throughout the course of the week the way bettors and fantasy guys talked about Tyrod Taylor. You would have thought he was the second coming. Texans were steamed all week from 7.5 down to like soft 4. I don't know if there was a 3.5 in the market or not, but soft 4 is kind of what I saw. Miami turned it over 5 times. And the Texans still couldn't cover at peak price. That's how bad Tyrod Taylor was. And this wasn't some like tall task. It's a Dolphins defense 26th in efficiency, 26th against the pass. Tyrod was terrible. 6th worst completion percentage compared to expectation. 1 pass completed beyond 10 yards. He wasn't good under pressure. He wasn't good when kept clean. He stunk with play action. 39% success rate for the Texans. 3 explosives all game. And so I think this is worth talking about when you have a 3.5 point move through the 6 and 7 onto the 4. I think we have to throw Tyrod in the bad or ugly category this
I week. Was surprised that he didn't run the football a little bit more. I know he was returning from a hamstring, but I felt a team so desperate to try and extend plays and struggling to identify weapons that Tyrod Taylor's legs would have been more of a focal point, knowing that the Dolphins defense, who plays a lot of man coverage, had given up chunk yardage in the past to Josh Allen. So that was one part of the game I was surprised didn't play a bigger role for Houston.
Maybe the hammy is not quite 100% yet.
Which would explain why you're kicking a field goal down 17-6 from the 2-yard line. So.
Nope. That's just their head coach.
David Coley, everyone's friend of analytics, my friend. That's exactly.
I just don't get it. You know, I think we talked about this a couple weeks back, where like this organization's so inept right now, and the head coach is beyond help.
The rebuild there.
Let's figure out what we have in Davis Mills. Yep. Right. I understand it hasn't looked good, but there's no talent around him. Why don't we get this guy some reps? Why don't we attempt to have better draft picks? Like 32-year-old Tyrod Taylor. I'm sure he's obviously an upgrade, as we know and the market indicated. But what are we getting out of that? Especially if this is the performance. I understand this was his basement level performance, and it's only going to get better from here. And it was his first game back in, you know, since week two. So there's going to be a little rust. But if we're going to lose games anyways, why not get Davis Mills more reps? Why not get a better draft position? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think it's an organization that on a variety of fronts has to figure out its identity, what direction it's going to go. And I'm not optimistic it's a rather quick rebuild down there by any stretch of the imagination, given everything that we've seen transpire in just a season and a half, essentially, where they had a commanding lead against the Kansas City Chiefs on the road in a playoff game, and everything has largely gone to shit since then. So we'll see what the Houston Texans can do over the back half of their schedule and figure things out if they're able to make any progress. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Last week, Payne, we had a ton of look ahead line adjustments. This week, not so much. Modest movements throughout the FanDuel Sportsbook, a couple around key numbers. So we can hit on them real quick before we get into talking about Bears and Steelers, the final game of NFL Week 9. New England Patriots now listed as a 2.5-point favorite as they're welcoming Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Look ahead number on this game had the Patriots a 3-point favorite.
Yes, and we're now down to 2 this morning. You know, it depends what version of Baker Mayfield you're going to get. Is it going to be the guy that is troubled by some of the disguised coverages that Bill Belichick will inevitably give him? Or is it a Cleveland offense that, again, on paper, is a top 5 unit? And if you look at the offenses the Patriots have played this year, this will be a huge step up in class. And that, I think, is what's dictating some of this movement. Is obviously Cleveland is better without OBJ. That is very clear. They showed it again yesterday. But when you look at this matchup-wise, Cleveland is going to be a far superior offense to anything the Patriots have faced, aside from Tom Brady, but it was in a torrential downpour. So I think that's partly why we've seen some of this movement. New England's offense, Mac Jones, you know, he's going through his rookie highs and lows, right? There was a stretch, obviously, where I understand you win on the road at the Chargers, but there was a stretch in that game where he was 1-for-12. And then you were afforded the luxury of playing a Carolina defense that was 19th in rush efficiency last week, and you were able to just pummel it down their throat. But inopportune turnovers from Mac Jones. So that combination is why we were seeing this movement here early in the week.
Also seeing a movement in Sunday Night Football's game that'll be right here in my backyard. The Chiefs listed as a 2.5-point favorite on the road at Allegiant Stadium to take on the Raiders, a pivotal showdown in the AFC West. Your look-ahead number here had the Chiefs laying a full field goal.
You going to that?
I will probably not be in attendance because it is largely a clusterfuck to try and get anywhere close to the strip on game days, but this would be one that I might actually consider.
Gotcha. Yeah, it'll be a pretty good game, obviously. Huge impact for the division race. You are right. Look ahead was 3. The reopen was 2.5. We're still at 2.5 early Monday morning. Have seen some juice kind of shade towards the Chiefs. issues on offense again yesterday. The defense has been fantastic. I do want to dig into the Raiders game a little bit more. That's one that I didn't pay much attention
to. They were the better team. I'm curious to see what you see, but I mean, from a yardage standpoint, yards per play, they were the better team. They moved the ball with relative ease. They were just done in by turnovers and plus territory that ultimately became their undoing. In a game where, full disclosure, you saw very real professional money come in on the home underdog and the Giants leading up to kickoff.
Yeah, it was one of those interesting line movements of the week where suddenly, you know, middle of the week, the line's 2.5, Raiders are favored, obviously, and then the big C news came out that 13 members of the Giants tested positive. They do the retest. It was only one of 13, and it was a coach. But they were doing a lot of things remote, and so they didn't have their normal work week, and then you did get a boost there with some injury news with guys like Golladay up. And so we saw the line kind of swing back. But you're right. I kind of had this game off to the side. Didn't dig into it a ton, but it felt like the Raiders deserved better based upon I constantly saw them in plus territory, and they just weren't getting points out of it. So, you know, this is a really tough game to navigate because the Raiders have had some really high highs, some really low lows, internal issues obviously going on there. The Chiefs' offense just can't get going, even yesterday. I understand the Packers were very good, but Patrick Mahomes didn't look great again. Travis Kelce, key drops, inopportune penalties. You're trying to get a ground game going based upon the looks that you're getting, but look who your running backs are. So there's some issues with the offense, but the defense is improving. We'll see if DJax gets implemented as the deep threat for the Raiders. Certainly plenty of time to get him into the fold for Sunday Night Football. So that'll be a nice bonus weapon that'll help stretch the field a little bit with the departure.
I think the most entertaining nugget I saw as it relates to Patrick Mahomes and some of his struggles over the last couple weeks, Josh Johnson actually accumulated more fantasy points in the second half against the Indianapolis Colts than Mahomes has in his last two starts. So we'll see if Kansas City's offense can...
Josh Johnson was awesome. That was shocking to see. Not shocking because we know the Colts secondary is kind of meh, but he was fantastic Thursday night.
He's out there slinging the rock around, playing for his 97th professional football team that I'm sure is a career that almost feels at this point like it spans the XFL, NFL Europe, and the CFL. The guy has taken so many snaps in different jerseys. Let me ask you this question.
Did you see his reaction after he threw the pick late on the deflection that would have given him the backdoor touchdown? It almost felt like he had more riding on the game himself than his actual game check. He was distraught that he threw.
I mean, if they score a touchdown there, you got, not only do you find a way into the back door, you get a little onside kick action, and he can go down in the annals with the head coach on the other side and Frank Reich for leading one of the more improbable comebacks when they faced a 42-10 deficit or whatever it was.
Yeah, I thought he was very good. Came in cold off the bench, and he was damn good. I did not expect
that. No, I don't think anybody did, and I know Jets fans were bummed at the end of the Mike White era, or at least a premature end, given what we'd seen early on in that game on the heels of a strong performance against the Bengals. Last but not least, as far as look-ahead adjustments, you see a move for a week from today, not surprisingly. The Rams, they were a 3-point favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook for their trip up to the Bay Area to take on San Francisco. You've now seen that number move to the Rams minus 4.5 upon reopening.
Not going to lie, was really hoping for a Rams blowout victory after watching the 49ers crap the bed to Arizona. Probably would have given us a 6, which would have been quite intriguing on the 49ers. Going to reevaluate this one. We've always seen this situation where McVay and Kyle Shanahan are cognizant of what each other are in terms of their perception as offensive minds. And these games have tended to have some points scored, so have to dig into this one a little bit more. We'll be deep diving it a week from today.
That we will. But before we close up shop for NFL Week 9, one final game to get through, and it, of course, is the Monday Night Football affair at Heinz Field, where the Steelers will welcome in the Chicago Bears. Pittsburgh, a 7-point favorite total in this game, 39.5 at FanDuel Sportsbook. No team has more Monday Night Football wins than the Pittsburgh Steelers at 50 since the NFL-AFL merger. 39, if that's where this total does indeed close tonight, tonight would mark the lowest closing total in the league this season alongside New England and Houston. That game, of course, went over the total. As far as some of the trends to keep an eye on, the Chicago Bears, 7 straight ATS failures as an underdog of 6-plus points. Since 2019, if you blindly bet the Bears in their last 40 games, you'd gone 15-25 against the spread. Not exactly ideal if you're trying to cash tickets at those numbers, but if there's one team that fails to meet oddsmakers' expectations week in, week out, it is the Big Ben-led Pittsburgh Steelers, coached by Mike Tomlin. They're 0-7 against the spread the last 7 games as a favorite. Payne, if you're looking for offense in this game, I'm not sure you're going to find a ton of it. The Bears come in 31st in points per game, 32nd in yards per play, 32nd in net yards per attempt. Steelers, not much better. 26th in points per game, 25th in yards per play, 28th in yards per rush, and 25th in net yards per attempt. But there is a little bit of optimism with Najee Harris being named AFC Offensive Player of the Month and the Steelers finding a resurgent ground game.
So without, you know, kind of crushing what we're going to discuss here, your main point at the top was the Steelers not doing overly well covering as a favorite. They have been better on Monday nights. They seem to show up in some of these primetime spots, but the Steelers are typically not a team you want to lay it with, and this price is certainly inflated. If this were a neutral state situation, you know, you're looking at Pittsburgh soft 4, right? So like 3.8 is probably where this line should be, and then factor in home field advantage, which we know is diminished greatly. Being kind, maybe 1.5. You know, so you don't get to 7 here in any form or fashion. So again, it becomes one of those situations that we talked about, you know, and I know we kind of crushed the Titans offense on the good, bad, and ugly. But again, like sometimes like the price just gets to a point where some of the matchups don't matter. And candidly, we're kind of here. Now, you mentioned Pittsburgh's offense. They have been a little bit better recently. 7th in EPA per rush since week 4. Najee Harris has started to hit some explosives. If you look at the rushing success rate, the down-to-down stuff, not bad there. 18th over that same stretch. The O-line is making tiny improvements. We know they went younger, so your hope is that, you know, this rebuilt offensive line with more cohesion and young guys getting their feet under them will start to improve a little bit. Still 30th, though, in line yards. Najee Harris has really just been out of this world. He's been everything they've hoped for, and I think more. This doesn't need to be an elite run game. It just needs to be a run game that, you know, provides some semblance of balance, a run game that, you know, forces defenses to respect it so you can hit that deep shot occasionally to Deontay Johnson or Chase Claypool, right? It needs to be a run game that gets linebackers to kind of make a false step forward, so when Ben inevitably throws his quick 4-yard pass, there isn't a ton of traffic. That's basically what the ground game needs to be. Khalil Mack out, obviously, is huge. Eddie Jackson trending towards doubtful. Those are two key cogs for the Bears defense that are out. Guys like Hicks and Nichols on the interior have been in and out of the lineup with injuries, and when they do play, they've been far less than 100%. And so suddenly when you look at the Bears defense the last 3 games, they're 31st in EPA per rush allowed. So it's possible that the Steelers are efficient enough running the ball again here tonight. We knew Sean Desai was playing with more safeties and less linebackers on the field, so by nature, little lighter boxes that you can run into. If you look at the entire landscape of things, the Bears are 24th in defensive rush efficiency this season. Now, keeping things even, this is a massive drop down in class for the Bears defense. Chicago's actually faced the most difficult schedule of offenses in the entire NFL. They had like 1 week of we can take a breath here. It's the Lions. Other than that, they've faced great offenses all season. If you're looking at this matchup, right, it's vital that Chicago kind of holds their own on early down runs. That way you put Big Ben into situations that he's probably not as comfortable with. Pittsburgh is averaging a league low 4.1 yards per play on first down. That'll be the key tonight. Other element here is Sean Desai is going to have to change what he does. You've had the extended time, right, Monday game. You've had an extra day to put in a game plan that can be specific against the Steelers. This can't be like the D'Amico Ryans game plan where you just let the opposing quarterback dink and dunk the way down the field, because that is by nature kind of how the defense is designed. We're going to keep everything in front, not give up the explosive. That has to change when you're playing the Steelers offense. So they're going to have to do some things with their coverage, especially with Eddie Jackson out, not to just keep things in front, but play a little bit tighter, make Ben throw into tighter windows when he does throw it 4, 5, 6 yards. And if you can do that, maybe you know your defense shows a little bit better than it has the last couple weeks.
You would hope that that was the case. I mean, there's no doubt when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, this team has, you know, shown some glimpses as far as their offensive capabilities. But to your point, I mean, if you're consistently behind the sticks trying to make things happen downfield, even with the Bears defense regressing some, not quite sure Pittsburgh is going to suddenly go out there and hang a crooked number on this team. On the other side of the ball, paying the Bears fans and, you know, organization a little bit more optimism, given what they saw last weekend from Justin Fields. His legs became a focal point of what Chicago wanted to do. I know not necessarily designed runs, but a willingness to take off from the pocket. 103 rushing yards were the most by a Bears quarterback, going all the way back to the early 70s in Bobby Douglas. He only had 140 rushing yards coming into it, but he's still struggling as far as the passing game is concerned. 31st of 33 qualified passers in completion percentage, that even with the 70% of his passes being completed last week. If you're the Bears and you're trying to devise a game plan to go out and attack the Steelers, you know, what are you looking to try and do to take some of the pressure off a young quarterback in hostile territory?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's expecting this massive outburst from Chicago offensively here, just based upon what they've shown and the talent they have. 16% of their possessions, a little less than that actually, have resulted in touchdowns. That's the league's lowest rate. I think there are some things that you can take away from last week against the 49ers that give you some level of confidence. Overall, the Bears were fourth in EPA per play last week, but Matt Nagy wasn't on the sideline, and signs point to him being there tonight. Is that correct, Todd?
Yeah, I believe so.
I believe he's going to be out there. And so while he's not calling plays, he has been quite restrictive, right? It's kind of like the, you know, kid going to movies with his friends and dad chaperoning, right? The behavior is going to be a little bit different. It's kind of the vibe here. And so even though Bill Lazor's calling plays, you know, the tempo, the pace, the structure of the game, right? Like how much running and passing is actually implemented is still kind of determined by Nagy, which stinks.
You know what?
So that
what is interesting on that point, though, if you read a lot of the Bears blogs and some of the reporters, all the articles this week swirled about the Bears trying to identify a suitable candidate to replace Matt Nagy at this point.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's inevitable, right? Like they're not going to be able to win enough games for him to save his job. I don't think. Maybe the GM is able to save his job if Justin Fields comes on late and looks like, you know, the franchise quarterback. We'll see. Now, you kind of have to like parse the two parts of Chicago's season, and it's Matt Nagy calling plays versus Bill Lazor. And Bill Lazor took over in week 4 against the Lions. And if you kind of look at things over that stretch, the Bears 9th in EPA per rush since week 4, 19th in passing success rate. So, you know, you mentioned some of the season long numbers for Fields, like they haven't been great. He hasn't been fantastic, but we know what he's dealing with, right? It's a makeshift offensive line that stinks. It's a receiver group that, as much as I love Allen Robinson, doesn't separate a ton, and I don't think he's overly happy in Chicago. And then what else is there, right? I mean, Darnell Mooney's, we can kind of see his potential, but he's not all the way there yet as a great route runner, and he doesn't have a large catch radius. So there's, you know, he's a nice piece, but he's not anything that's going to really concern you every single down. Lazor's going to have to be creative tonight. And so some of those matchups that you mentioned, we're going to need to see Justin Fields use his legs. And that is an element that is extremely difficult to game plan for. That is an element that changes games. So his mobility has to be in use tonight, and I think it will be, right? I kind of hinted there was a little knee injury he was playing through, and that's why he hadn't been running. We saw him look fully healthy last week. Chicago's been really efficient running the ball from three wide sets since Lazor's taken over as a play caller. 55% rushing success rate from that formation. when you go with your bulk packages, the three tight end packages that we've seen at times. Chicago's been efficient throwing. Pittsburgh's struggled defending pass from the three tight end sets. So those are kind of some of the areas. But at the end of the day, like, the Bears don't have a massive advantage here. There's one or two areas where maybe they can find some relative success if they do those things. But ultimately, you know, when you're looking at this, very sharp money came in under at 40. Then you had some contrarian guys that are respected that said, hey, you know, like 38.5, 38 is kind of too low. We're going to value bet the over and get out ahead of, you know, the public who inevitably will go over here. And so that's why we're back out to 39.5. So there is a little bit of a difference opinion on the total. I do think, though, if, you know, you are betting this game as a professional just based on price, it's Chicago or pass.
One element that I do think is interesting in terms of the quarterback run game, when you look at the Steelers' schedule opponents, they struggled to contain Josh Allen way back in week one. Since then, the quarterbacks that they faced, Derek Carr, Joe Burrow, Aaron Rodgers, Teddy Bridgewater, Geno Smith, and Baker Mayfield. So we'll see if this is a little bit of a jolt to the system that they have to worry about a quarterback actually taking off from the pocket, looking to pick up yardage, not just in scramble mode.
Very possible, right? Because, you know, as great as the Steelers defense is, and that's obviously been the strength of the entire organization for multiple years, and as much as we kind of nitpick at Mike Tomlin and some of his decision makings, you know, when to go for it, when to not, even though the defense is unwilling to adapt at times, the defense has been great. But that unwillingness to adapt and change their philosophy and style, to your point, might lead to Justin Fields having some success as a runner tonight.
We shall see what we get. Two iconic franchises with anything but iconic offenses doing battle on a big stage to close out NFL Week 9. As always, encourage you guys to follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard. Take advantage of all the great new user incentives in states where applicable. Payne, any final words of wisdom, parting shots, things you'd like to get off your chest before we go back to the lab and try and dissect the College Board before we return for Wednesday's show?
No, it's everything. Let's stay hot. Let's keep the train on the tracks going quite fast. And my landscapers are here. So if you hear blowing, that's the noise. Let's kind of get out of Dodge before that becomes annoying for listeners.
I mean, it's always the case. They know that we're filled with hot air, and so it's a perfect way to close things up. Best of luck for all of you, our loyal listeners, with whatever investments you choose to make tonight in the game between the Bears and Steelers. If your investments lead you to Maction on Tuesday night, we'll be right back here with you on Wednesday to talk about College Football Week 11. In the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.